A legal settlement for state fair victims falls apart. Who's to blame? A new accident at the fair. The candidates for governor talk jobs, and the first lady puts Indianapolis back on her travel schedule. That plus a gold medal winner back in Indiana and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending August 17,
2012. Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, the $13.2 million State Fair stage collapse settlement fell apart. Attorney General Greg Zeller blames one attorney for ruining the deal that included $7.2 million coming from two companies involved in the tragedy. In June, the Attorney General announced the deal with two companies, Mid-America Sound and James Thomas Engineering. But there were two conditions. First, victims who took the money gave up their rights to sue the companies. Second, the companies had to be comfortable with the number of the victims and families that agreed to it. That's where the problem happened. 11 of the 62 claimants declined, and MidAmerica withdrew its offer. Zeller blames attorney Ken Allen, who represents seven victims and victims' families.
Or the one lawyer who decided not to accept the deal essentially kept money out of everybody's pocket. And I think the questions really need to be raised to him why there was one attorney who thought differently than all of the other lawyers that have looked at the same exact information.
Did Ken Allen make the right move? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm WishTV State House reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, was this a lowball offer?
I have a different question. What is Greg Zeller doing in the middle of that? I mean, if the state's liability is capped at another $6 million, he can take that $6 million, he can bring it to a judge and say, we're done. You decide how it's going to be done. What is he negotiating about here? Is the state's liability not capped? I mean, there's some talk out there that there was a contract signed after this tragedy, where the state agreed to indemnify, or I should say pay, whatever judgments were paid, were levied against some of these vendors in full. Now, I mean, are we capped or aren't we capped? He has no business being in the middle of that, and he has nothing to say about whether or not there are private rights of action. So
well,
I want to know the answer to that question.
He brought $6 million to the table.
Right. But that's all he's bringing, and it's going to be distributed.
And it's going to be distributed. So I think, why is he upset that this fell through?
Well, I think he's trying to get the money to the people. I think that was his challenge all along. He wanted to do that. He wanted to get this done as quickly as they could do so people could have their money. 22 of the 23 agreed to the deal. The one that didn't is also the only one that never participated in any of the discussions, any of the negotiations on this. And so, you know, there's a question as to why that's the case. They also, the two companies involved, signed an agreement that said the $7.2 million, if there was any more found, that money would automatically go to these victims. So that was the amount that was agreed upon by everybody in the room, including the 22 lawyers and everybody else involved. So, look, you know, the one guy that didn't, he's got to do what he thinks is best for his clients. I get that, you know, but you got to wonder why if 23 people are involved and 22 say yes and one says no, why that's
well,
the case.
But does it seem like from the state's point of view there's an effort to get this dealt with and get it off the table?
I think that we can stipulate that, sure. I think that's apparent here. The legislature allocated the money. There's a deadline, I believe, of January of 2013 that has to be distributed to the recipients, to the victims and their estates. And I think now that it will be moving forward, minus the the $7.2 million, but I think the Attorney General's office has indicated and signaled it wants to get that out quickly and still beat the deadline. But I think the reason probably for part of this, to your original question, is what Ann suggested. The state contends that whatever was signed, if anything was signed, was not a binding contract. But if in fact, it'll still be litigated. Uh-huh. I mean, and so you'll still incur additional expense, additional cost, and potentially, I suppose, you might end up having somebody say, yes, you are on the hook for that amount. And this would have addressed it up front and had the company that rented the state the stage and the engineering company basically agreeing to put this behind them. So I think that's the motivation on the part of the Attorney General's office. If, in fact, the state may win and say it's not a binding contract, but it's still going to be litigated.
And they should have disclosed this when they came up with the $6 million. If they had done the right thing from the beginning and put the cost of living adjustment, put $21 million out there, gave it to a judge and said, here it is. This is the extent of the state's liability. Go ahead and do it. But when they start executing documents after the fact that are going to result in litigation, and then you don't even know what the cap of the state is, and whether they knew about this when they put the other $6 million in is another question.
You're talking about the cost of living adjustment from when the state liability
was
adopted.
Ago.
I just want to make sure everybody understands what you're talking about. It's gotten kind of messy.
Well, yes, and that's understandable. The attorney who has balked is also the one who represents some of those who were killed or seriously injured.
Yeah.
So it's understandable that he wants to get the most he can for those families. I don't blame him one bit for that, and I refuse to blame him for this coming apart. If this wasn't a good deal, then it wasn't a good deal. They tried to put it together. It didn't work. It's gotten messy, but that's the nature of things. Unfortunately, that's the way it's going to be, and there were serious and dead people as a result of this. You have to come to an equitable agreement.
And you think this should go to court?
If the state has a cap on its liability, you simply implead that money in court. You file a suit and you say, Judge, we agree we owe this amount of money. You decide how it's divvied up. That's all they had to do. Instead, they're doing this moogie-foog trying to settle against private entities for their negligence, and you've got to believe it's because of that document they signed after the fact.
It's also private entities who they were in business with.
They're not locked in anymore.
Yes, they are. They're locked in.
Well, then
what,
they signed the contract knowing it was
void? And if the judge gives a $100 million judgment on the two companies, they still only have $7.2 million. They get that judgment, but they're not going to get any more money than that because there isn't any more money than that in these companies. That's what they determined there is.
Oh, I see. And we're supposed to take their word for that, too. And
no,
they don't
but
have insurance coverage either.
Yes, they do. But what I'm saying is if it's determined that that's all the money there is, they're not going to get any more than that.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
All right. Just a day before the anniversary of the State Fair stage collapse, a stagecoach took a nasty spill at the fair. Amateur video shows the stagecoach making its way around the track at the Pepsi Coliseum Sunday night. After numerous figure eights, it tips over and crashes to the ground. State Fair Queen Erica Burkhart was riding on the stagecoach. She's one of five people who were treated for injuries.
We looked at everybody. We identify everybody that was in the coach, everybody that was participated in it. We looked at the vehicle itself, checked the animals, checked the harnesses, those things. We looked at everything that was involved. Everything appeared that it was normal, and it purely is an accident.
That's the state police assessment. Mike McDaniel, did the state fair react well this time?
Very much so, and the response was immediate. The people who were hurt were taken to the hospital. Everybody was released, but one person who stayed overnight who had a cracked rib, and they were released the next morning. But the response was what it was supposed to be. It was immediate. They did everything they were supposed to do. This guy that drove this particular wagon was from Iowa, and apparently has been doing this kind of thing for 20 years all over the country. So there wasn't any reason to think that, he didn't know what he was doing. So it's an accident, and they dealt with it, and it's too bad that it happened.
The timing comes at an interesting time, though, and the media also was there immediately. Did they react well?
Well, I think it was handled about as well as it could have, but, it makes people who are already skittish about going to the state fair even more so because, and it's virtually on the anniversary of the other tragedy. And granted, this wasn't as serious, and fortunately nobody was badly hurt, and they did respond appropriately, I thought. but it still makes it, you know, it just makes people nervous about these things.
There was also a four-year-old that hit by a truck. Is the state fair? Snake bit?
No, I think one of the things is that everything is being scrutinized now under a new lens because of the accident with the state fairground, the grandstand. You know, these are incidents that would have been looked at before, but they would have been, you know, oh, well, that's, you know, that's happens sometimes. You know, this girl broke away from her mother and got into the path of a truck. Those would have been explainable in different ways. Now it looks like they're snake bit because of the problem last year. Hopefully these things will get shaken out over the course of the next few years. They'll have good, safe fares, and you know, we'll be able to have a settlement that's equitable for the people who were harmed last year, and they can go forward with what is a great institution in the state.
I guess it's exactly right. It's sort of equivalent to the politician who is becomes known for making gaffes. Insert your favorite politician who's known for that.
I'm going to say, everybody's thinking Joe Biden.
Well, I'll let you. But so whatever he says is, as John suggests, viewed through a different filter. And what somebody else would say in a similar position is just discounted as having misspoken. Once you're sort of in the yeah. spotlight, and I think that's the unfortunate situation that the state fair finds itself in. But when you look at it, in terms of how many people go, thousands and thousands of people, and enjoy it, and walk away, you know, with not so much as maybe a case of sunburn
or indigestion
from some of the deep fried, triple fried, rolled in powdered sugar Oreos.
Not that I've tried them.
I got a few out in the back.
Still popular.
Yeah,
still popular.
It's a safe event. I think we can all still celebrate that.
To politics. A new poll commissioned by the Indiana Chamber of Commerce shows Mike Pence with an 18-point lead in the race for governor, 50-32 over Democrat John Gregg. Pence made a new jobs proposal this week.
The first step that we are proposing today is to create a partnership with industry and university leaders to launch an industry-driven research institute. We're calling it the Indiana Applied Research Enterprise.
John Katzenberger, should Mike Pence consider himself to be in a comfortable position?
If he does, that's a sure way to lose. While 18 points is a formidable lead, I think that with this much time left, you better put your foot on the gas.
He's also at 50, which is kind of the magic number.
Mike, Jim, I understand that. But okay, then let it go ahead and let him get comfortable and lackadaisical. You know, I mean, that's the question. Go ahead. You know, should he feel comfortable? Well, he should not be comfortable. He needs to put his foot on the accelerator if he knows what's good for him.
18-point lead's pretty sizable at this point.
I'm not dismissing that at all. I'm just saying the question is,
I'd rather be 18 points up with 80 days left than 18 points behind.
No question.
Would you buy into that argument?
Absolutely.
I hope so.
Okay. Well,
but I wouldn't get comfortable either.
Yeah, John Schwannis, that same poll.
Hemi engine.
That same poll showed, as a couple of other independent polls have recently, that the Senate race between Joe Donnelly and Richard Murdoch is a statistical dead heat. I say that's bad news for John Gregg, because if you're a big Democratic contributor, you now know where to send your money.
Well, it certainly makes it harder for the Gregg campaign or for Democrats to dismiss the chamber poll as somehow inherently flawed, that it wasn't the right sample, that it was the wrong 600 people that didn't represent Hoosier attitudes and opinions. You can't say on the one hand it was dead on and we're in a statistical dead heat, and but over here it's somehow flawed. So it does make it difficult, and it shows that if people who want to loosen the purse strings, if they want the, and I will stipulate, anything can happen, of course. It's still relatively early, even at this point. But the safer bet at this point would be the Senate.
Was that a good poll?
Well, I don't know whether I didn't see the methodology for it.
You complained about the Rasmussen poll,
right?
Because
the split was on this. Did you?
8%.
That's in the frame of reference.
There were 8% more Republicans than
that's
Democrats.
That's certainly within the ballpark, unlike the Rasmussen poll,
which was 13%.
So yes, but what's interesting about this, it was taken the week before John Gregg started on the air. Mike Pence has been on the air unanswered for 3 months and is at 50 now. There's no question that's a better place to be at than 32. But on the other hand, he hasn't moved those markers in those 3 months he's been on the air. And he's been trying to make people feel good and like him, and that number hasn't moved, which I think is pretty interesting.
15% undecided. The numbers on this race are pretty outstanding.
Which means that if John Gregg's going to catch Mike Pence,
if he got
all of them,
and he's not,
then he's got
a three-way race.
To change their minds.
It's a three-way race, which also makes it tougher.
But Rupert,
if you're
50%,
Rupert's not going to be
better than 3%.
Which is what any generic libertarian in Indiana gets 3%.
He's going to get 3%.
He's going to take him from you.
And there's 15% undecided. More people are identifying themselves on these surveys, not only in Indiana but nationally, as Republicans. And more and less independents are saying they're independents this year.
The Republican number, the self-identified Republican number was 46%.
Exactly.
That's
pretty amazing. So, and then the Senate race number is almost identical to the Rasmussen poll.
Right.
And so, you know, I mean, it's about where you'd think it ought to be after coming off the Lugar-Murdoch primary. But Murdoch's got his work cut out for him on that one, no question about it. But I thought this was a huge number for Mike Pence, and it's going to be hard for John to overcome this at 80 days.
Yeah, they need to be informed that Mike Pence is a charter member of the Tea Party, and they don't do that.
Here
and
it
you
comes.
Can't tell that. Well, that's the truth, Mike,
well,
and you know it.
They're going to be informed.
They're going to be informed.
It's
right now,
on
he's all about ice skating and his high school sweetheart, but he is a charter member of the Tea Party.
Let's talk about what John Gregg's doing. He finally started his TV commercials this week, and he, too, put forward a jobs proposal.
So we're going to create an Indiana capital investment corporation, which will invest in private equity, and this will establish a presence in Indiana to actively seek investment opportunities.
All right. His new ad is positive. It's him sitting on the porch in his hometown of Sanborn talking about the people in Sanborn and what he's learned from them. How quickly, John Schwanes, will his TV message turn negative?
Well, if they're listening to Ann, I'm guessing it's going to be any
moment
now. It
depends on how you define negative.
Maybe by the time this airs.
Comparative.
I will say it's interesting that he started with the spot, which is called Hobo, which was a reference to one of his buddies, longtime friends in Sanborn, who's battling illness. It's a feel-good spot, autobiographical spot. And we have in some campaigns recently seen people skip that, out of necessity perhaps, and go directly toward the negative. I will say this probably makes sense to at least have established some sort of sense of self-definition before you go negative. But now that self-definition has taken place, let the games begin, I guess.
Well, I mean, that poll tells you that John Gregg's got to do something to bring Mike Pence down to his level, right?
Well, that's the theory, I guess, that's pervasive in all of politics today is, you got to bring the other guy down instead of boost yourself up. I mean,
well,
the other option
to both,
is boost yourself up and make the case for yourself. And, whether or not that spot does it is debatable. But I think that there can be a case made. It's just that, they lost most of the summer.
In the meantime, they both want to talk about jobs.
Yeah.
And they both are making proposals that don't require any state investment to speak
right.
of.
Right. But I don't know why they're talking about jobs, though, because when we had daylight savings time, they were going to pour in here. Remember? They're going to pour in here. And right to work, we were going to get the jobs going to go through the ceiling. I don't know what happened. We ought to ask the governor.
Indiana unemployment rate went up by 0.2%.
And that's
July.
After right to work and after daylight savings. Gee whiz.
Did she answer your question?
I don't think so.
No.
I don't like the question. I'll answer something else.
Would you care to?
What was the question?
How quickly does his message turn negative?
Look, they're going to have to go negative in a hurry, and I think they will out of necessity. I thought that was a good feel-good spot if he'd had the money to do it in June or July, somewhere near, but he doesn't. And he's still not on statewide. They didn't buy Terre Haute. They didn't buy Evansville. They're still not on the radio. Pence is not only on television with his sixth spot, but on radio statewide.
Yeah, we knew
it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard for them to make up that ground in this time, but he's going to have to go after him in a big way, and I suspect they'll do that.
We knew that the corporate money and all of the
fat
cat money would pour into
it's
Pence.
Okay when it works for you, but
no,
it's not
okay.
when it works for
it
us.
It is undemocratic.
How does Pence respond to the inevitable negative or comparative spots? I think there's this notion that he would love to stay positive.
I think we've established that previously throughout, on this program.
But
others will carry the negative.
Yeah, he'll be negative. Of course he'll be negative. He'll just have the party do it for him.
If he does go negative.
Labor Day is almost here. Get ready. All right, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific poll question in connection with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, which candidate will be best at creating new jobs? Your choices are A, Mike Pence, B, John Gregg, C, Rupert Bonham, or D, none of the above. Last week's question was, who do you support in the race for president? 33% said Barack Obama, 59% said Mitt Romney, 8% said someone else. To take part in the poll, just go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. The First Lady will be in Indianapolis next week. Michelle Obama is coming for a campaign fundraiser at Lucas Oil Stadium, one that was postponed last month following the theater shooting in Colorado.
Absolutely.
Meantime, Congressman Andre Carson spoke up against budget plans from Mitt Romney this week that would cut funding to the Amtrak repair facility in Beech Grove. And Delaney, when's the president coming to Indiana?
Well, he hasn't. I know you'll find this hard to believe, but he hasn't checked his schedule with me yet. But I'll call him and ask. Tell him you want to know. I think it's great that Michelle Obama is coming. I think it's a wonderful thing for us, and I'm all for it.
Mitt Romney was here about 10 days ago, two weeks ago. He made one campaign appearance in Evansville. This is the first of the year for either of the Obamas. Presidential race passing us over.
Look, the Rasmussen poll had Obama down 16 points in Indiana. Your poll has us down, had him down 16
scientifically
points.
Scientifically accurate.
But it's 16.
You called
I find
in
it interesting when I did the
my...
math on that, it's about the same amount, which is interesting. But this is more bad news for John Gregg, because she's going to come in here and take a bunch of money out of here that won't go to Donnelly and won't go to Gregg, and you won't see any of those guys standing next to her for photo ops, that's for sure. So it's good that she's making up the event that she didn't get to do because of the Colorado tragedy, and it's always good to have somebody in the first family to come to the state. So it's not helpful to the Democrats.
Talk about damning
with Pence. It's not helpful to Gregg or Pence or Donnelly to come in here and do this, because she's going to take a bunch of money away from her.
Well, apparently they're sticking.
You're so sympathetic.
$10,000 for a picture with Michelle Obama.
The whole family can get the picture.
Yeah.
No public events scheduled along with us, according to what we've been told
though,
at this point.
You know?
She does campaign events.
Well, I know
she
does campaign. Well, this is a campaign event.
I thought it was a bit private,
but I'm talking about public campaign events.
Well,
free, open to the public.
My sense is that the reelection campaign is looking to Indiana Democrats this time around, as opposed to 4 years ago, more for the financial support than for the votes in the Electoral College. I think
we're back to the old pattern where they don't campaign here; they come and take
the
money
norm,
and they can use to spend.
The new normal has become the old normal, which is turning into the new normal again. I guess.
I think what we're really seeing here is your withdrawal from the
yes,
last
yes,
time,
yes, yes,
and,
yes.
And we can get
He's
some counseling
slighted.
For that.
He's feeling slighted.
Yeah. You got the trembles?
They're calming.
Remember, he grew up not far from the Wisconsin border, so he's feeling, you know, we're an exciting campaign.
Yeah, well, speaking of national event, the choice of Paul Ryan, does that affect any races in Indiana?
Oh, yeah. I think that's going to affect
it's
a number of races.
It's going to be positive for Indiana.
Oh, no. I think what you're going to see in the southern part of the state, where you have large concentrations of the elderly, you know, they supported that Ryan budget. They supported taking
you're
the Medicare
his
away from
on
people.
Medicare and Social
yeah.
Security.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to get a coupon. It certainly
you get an
does.
Option. Yeah. You can keep it
you
the way it
coupon,
is or take a coupon.
You get a coupon
you
and you can
way.
Go shop your own insurance
you
with a lifetime
way.
Cap.
Actually, it doesn't,
they want to take away.
You gotta read
his
it.
Proposal doesn't affect anybody who's 55 or older.
No,
yeah, but
it
it's
doesn't.
Going to affect it for the future. There's no question about it. And when you've got a situation where they want to take away the coverage for pre-existing
just try
conditions.
To be honest about
and
it.
And I am being honest about it, Michael. You just don't like the answer.
No, you don't read
you
it.
Put
you don't
him
know
up,
what's in it.
You want to put him up as some kind of a deficit hawk when you voted for every single proposal.
You don't know what's in it
there
if you get an
explode
option.
The deficit. Exploded the deficit.
I don't think
Anne. Your guy.
Anne won't have an option, will she?
No.
All right, finally, David Budaya brought home a gold medal in diving in the Summer Olympics. He won the competition in the 10-meter platform. He's now returned to his own stopping grounds at Purdue, and while contemplating the future in the 2016 Olympics, Budaya says he may try a new sport.
this could be way outside shot, but I'm a big dreamer. Dreaming's not a bad thing. So now that I have 4 months off from diving, I'm going to give a shot at gymnastics, just the vaulting of it. I did gymnastics before diving. So, you know, you watch Michaela Maroney. She'd be an incredible diver.
Mike McDaniel, is that dream or fantasy?
Well, it's got to be, first of all, that's a great win, but to change sports like that at that age, it's got to be hard to do. I mean, you know, I grew up wanting to be an Olympic high jumper, and now my dream has changed to the luge. Because once I figured I couldn't high jump my waist size, then I went straight to the luge.
All right, great Olympics for Indiana, though, because you had him, you had Lauren Cheney on the soccer team.
We had a couple of IU students. We had Meb in the Olympics. Now, he only plays fourth, but that's still pretty darn good at 37.
And Tamika Ketchinch got a gold. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwattis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in 1,000 different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the 1,000 and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.